Okay, good evening everyone. Welcome to the May Council meeting for the town of Bassendean. We've got a lot of people here tonight, so thank you for your interest and we welcome your input this evening. As always, we here at the town of Bassendean think it's important to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, which is the Wadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and to give our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Last week was National Reconciliation Week and the town had a wonderful event down at Mary Crescent with Reserve, which was the Danju Kulyani gathering. We had lots of school children coming and attending that event, and it was a really wonderful example of how the town is strongly committed to reconciliation and building stronger relationships with the Aboriginal people in our community. So something that we can be really proud of as a town. Tonight, as always, our meeting is recorded. It's live streamed to the internet, so this is in an effort to increase accessibility for the community to their council, to be more transparent and open with our communication. So if you do choose later on in the evening to ask a question or make a statement, just wanted to bring your attention to the fact that it will be live streamed to the community. First of all, tonight, though, I have a wonderful duty to perform. We have some special people joining us here tonight. This is the Wright family sitting over by the door. And we have them here tonight because one of their children is fortunate to receive an award from the town of Bassendean. And this is a town of Bassendean Sports Achievement Award. So we all know that sport is a really important part of our community for people's health and fitness, but also for their mental health. And it's something that the town is committed to supporting. And Jack, who is here tonight, has been really successful in his chosen field of sport and has represented the town and the state earlier in the year in Hobart. So Jack is involved in Little Athletics, and he went to the National Championships back in April. So Jack competed in the 800 metres, the 1500 metres and also the 1500 metre walk, and did exceptionally well in those events. I think the best event was sixth in the 1500 metre walk, is that correct, Jack? So that's an amazing effort by Jack. I'd also like to acknowledge Jack's brother. Is it Chris? So unfortunately, Chris, who is Jack's twin, was disqualified and wasn't able to attend, but I believe he also has a lot of sporting talent, and we wish you the best of luck in future to be able to have the same opportunity as your brother in coming years. But now I would like to invite Jack up so that I can present you with your Sports Achievement Award, and we really look forward to you continuing to be a strong ambassador for the town of Bassendean in the future. So tonight who are interested in an item that was originally listed on the agenda. So that was item 10.4 relating to the men's shed. And as some of you would no doubt be aware, that item has been withdrawn. So I'm just going to invite our CEO, Peter Mabbs, to speak to that item at the beginning of the meeting. Good night, Wright family.
Thank you very much. I'd like to reinforce that the town of Bassendean and council remain absolutely committed to the men's shed. My action to postpone this agenda item was an administrative decision and reflects my governance obligations, which I take very seriously. As the Chief Executive Officer for the town of Bassendean, I am committed to ensuring the best outcome for the community, the men and the town. I appreciate the men have been waiting a long time for a community facility to provide a supportive and inclusive meeting place where they can work together on community projects. I'd like to stress the value of a men's shed is unarguable and not in dispute. I would also like to advise that as soon as this matter is ready, the item will be rescheduled without delay for Council's consideration. In the meantime, I seek the understanding of the men. I ask for your trust and patience to ensure the best outcome is achieved for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate that. I too would like to speak to an item before we go any further. So the item relates to, what's the number, 10.8, I think? No. The waste smart tracking item. 10.3. Mm-hmm. So some of you would no doubt be aware that the West Australian featured Bassendean on their front cover this morning. I think the title was, "What Have You Been Up To? Council Wants Big Brother Style Technology to Scan Your Rubbish." So that was a little bit of a disappointing slant for the West Australian to take on what is a positive initiative for the town of Bassendean. So I think everybody is becoming increasingly aware of the enormity of the waste problem that our society faces. And Western Australians produce one of the highest amounts of waste in the whole nation. So to deal with such a significant problem, our society needs to take some innovative approaches to find solutions. So I think we recognise that the Earth has limited resources and that we can't sustain the traditional model that society's been working to, where we take resources, we make something with it, and then we throw it away. And as a town, we've been really committed to working more towards a circular waste economy. So where there is a regenerative approach taken and that we're more responsible with the resources and we have optimal use of those resources. So in alignment with those values that have come from our community that Council stands by, the town of Bassendean was given a great opportunity to partner with Curtin, with Welgar, with Sewers, who are our waste contractor, and some other industry partners, to put in a grant application for a research project. So that's the proposed smart waste tracking project. It's currently only at the funding application stage, so there's been no guarantee of funds for this project at this stage. If successful in getting the grant application, members of our community would have the ability to voluntarily opt in to be part of this project, and that would give them the ability to have individual feedback on their own waste generation and to help us as a council and also in the bigger picture to gain a better understanding of what waste is being generated. So this would allow us to tailor education programs more specifically. And it would help residents to give them valuable information about what they can do. It would also be good for us to be able to speak with the producers about what items are ending up in landfill and have an evidence base to target packaging reforms, which is something that the town has been advocating for. So this is just part of an overall value that the town has, that we're seeking to improve waste management. So this particular project, although it was framed in the media as something that was going to be imposed upon our community, it was not an accurate reflection of the proposal. And it's actually a great opportunity for the town of Bassendean to again show leadership in the area of waste management and to support our community and our council's commitment to minimising waste to landfill, reducing contamination and improving our recycling rates. So we've had a lot of interest. If their grant is successful, then I'm sure that we will be able to share the information about how this project would work specifically with our community directly. It's unfortunate that it has been presented in a way that has had some negative connotations, but I'm really confident that this would be an excellent opportunity for our town to again show some leadership and encourage some changes that are greatly needed in our society around waste. So I just wanted to speak to that because I'm sure some people have had questions after reading the somewhat inflammatory headline this morning. And if you have questions on that item or what Peter's spoken to or any other items on tonight's agenda, of course we welcome you to come and ask questions in public question time, which is what we're about to move on to now. So there are a lot of people in the room. If you have some questions, can I ask that you keep it to two questions when you come up? If there's time at the end, by all means, you're welcome to come and ask additional questions, but just so that everybody in the room gets the opportunity to ask a question if they have one. And you try and stick to the point so that we can really address everybody's questions this evening. So is there anybody who would like to ask a question? Clive, would you...
Do you want me to ask the question or do you want me to make the statement?
Oh, well, you might want to wait to statements by members of the public, which is coming up next. Any questions at this point? Ms. Jacobson.
Hello. it's on.
Hello.
Is it on?
Test.
You might need, yeah, that's better.
Yeah, I might need to get right in there. I've just got a couple of questions not relating to items on the agenda. One is about the Pickering Park boat ramp area, and it's great to see that that's been completed on schedule.
Sorry, I'm just having trouble hearing you.
The Pickering Park boat ramp area.
Yes.
I noticed that there is no signage relating to the algal bloom in the Swan River at the moment down there. And I'm assuming that doesn't mean that the water has suddenly become safe to catch fish in. Is that signage missing, or is it going to be replaced? There is a sign at Point Reserve.
So the question relates to down at Pickering,
yes.
Point, that there's no signage there at the moment referring to the algal bloom,
yeah.
And the safety or otherwise of the water. And so the question was whether or not that signage is missing or if it's going to be replaced.
Or whether the water's actually safe.
Yeah.
There was a signage that was installed at various spots around the along the Bassendean foreshore, and
it
I
was
assume
there before,
yes,
yeah.
And I assume that the sign has gone missing. So
yeah.
I'll speak to the Environmental Health Officer tomorrow.
Great.
And ask if she could arrange for that signage to be re-erected.
Thank you. Thanks for letting us
Great,
know.
Thanks. Also, I actually had a member of my family mention to me earlier this week that termites have been eating the jetty at Point Reserve. And so I went and had a look, and yes, they have. That's the upstream jetty. There's one quite important piece of wood in that which has had substantial termite damage, and it would probably be a good idea to replace that before the whole thing, you know, needs doing.
I'm
assuming it's a susceptible timber, whereas the rest of the wood doesn't look susceptible.
Did you want to speak to that?
No, just that we do have an inspection program, but I'll follow that up with staff anyway and arrange for a further inspection.
That would be wonderful.
So it's
the upstream
side of that
yeah.
jetty.
Thank you.
Yeah. And also there's a couple of feral beehives at Point Reserve in the tree hollows, which are obviously taking up the place of what might be good habitat for native birds, and whether they can be dealt with or not. Was another question I had.
Okay, great. Thank you. I really appreciate that feedback. Yes, Mr. Kay.
Thank you, Your Worship. Bruce Kay, 11 Earls Ferry Court, Bassendean. My question relates to item 10.3 on the agenda tonight. I've been reading the paperwork and trying to understand the meaning of it. First of all, I'm not against trying to improve our waste management. We're bidding to get some money to do a study, but there's nothing in the paperwork that suggests what happens at the end of the study. So if the study proves something good and we want to extrapolate it to the whole of the town, there's a cost. If the study proves that it doesn't do anything and we abandon it, then there's a great swag of electronic equipment that doesn't have a waste management plan. So in the document, if I can understand it correctly, the study will use 1,500 households as the study group, not the 7,500 that exist in the town.
That's correct.
And the only thing I've been able to find about money is the last page in the attachment that suggests the whole study will take 36 months and have a cost of $5.5 million. But I'm not sure that I'm reading the last line in the study, which is headed percent PV, as cost. But obviously there's a cost in there. There's a lot of cost.
So
if the study shows a successful outcome and we extrapolate this from 1,500 households to 7,700, there's an enormous financial cost to this town to do that, which is not mentioned. I don't think we should be proceeding with a grant to do the study without having some consideration of the outcome at the end and what it means for us.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Mr. Carty to speak to that because he's been the person most involved with the research team and collaborating with the Curtin researchers. Would you mind responding to Mr. Kay's questions?
Oh, pleasure. In regards to the funding application, there's a number of organisations that have taken part in it. The Town of Bassendean being one of those. The Town of Bassendean is not putting any financial support into the project. Our part of it is to have allocation of people volunteering to participate in the project, and we as a community, from that information, will get the benefit out of the report in the long run. I'll come to that in a minute. Basically, the initial part of it, having organisations like business, because this is a business-orientated project. It's not a local government project. We only participate in the business sector of the business. And the business process is there for the business to develop projects that will actually decrease the amount of waste going into landfill, instead of the other way around in the past, where local governments have been the one initiating this project. It's now gone, the federal government are looking for more for businesses to actually make that stance as well. So we've been invited to participate in it and to use some of our residents within the town to do that. Mainly we've been invited because the initiates that our council have taken over a number of years to try and improve the way we're doing our waste services within the town. In regards to the businesses and the funding amount that's allocated, because it's federal funded money, it means that any results or any disciplines or any actions taken through this project, everyone will get the benefits of it. So you're talking about 7,700 residents in the town. We're talking about all residents throughout Australia that will get some benefit if some of the possible results go the way we're all thinking they're going to go. And the results other councils and other people throughout Australia will get is that practices will be put in place that will allow people to identify through technology, and where a disc will be placed in the lid of a bin and identify the level of the bin, and as that comes in, it'll be placed into a waste collection truck that will have the ability to actually, through technology, allocate or identify what products are going in the truck, either waste, plastic or cans, or whatever type of material that goes in there. They'll be able to identify that, and then people from the University of WA will be able to analyse that. That's where basically we're getting to that situation to analyse that and try and decrease the amount of waste in there. From that ability of identifying those type of products and the box packaging using, that information will be able to be used now to go back to business and say, you are directly involved in using waste to landfill and being one of the main culprits of the landfill problem we've got within the state, and we're asking you to do something about it. So that then will, the whole of Australia will get the benefit of this project if it comes to fulfills what we're trying to achieve. The outcome is at the end of the 3 months, all that information will be allowed to all local governments and to other organisations and to businesses to start developing the ways and technology to make this a better project. At the end of the day, the town of Bassendean will have the benefit of 1,500 people being volunteered into this project and given them the opportunity to participate and provided with an education stream to help them along the way that other people in other regions may not be able to do. And that education will come from facts and figures. That'll be coming from, these are the type of materials you need. We work with you through an app, through an education process, through a consultation process to help them along the way and helping us to understand why businesses, why people are using that type of packaging material into the bin. So, you know, if we can decrease the amount of waste going into landfill, obviously our cost to the town will decrease the amount of money we're paying to our providers to put it in the ground. Your rates will decrease, and so there'll be other benefits for the town to use. So it is going to be a good benefit for the town. The machinery that you'll be looking at the major of the funding coming through into organisations like sewers and that, they can't go out and buy, you know, $1 million worth of the equipment to put it. So they're asking the government to say, if we're going to succeed in this type of business and do this type of thing, we need some support and help and funding to help purchase these type of equipments. Now, the town of Bassendean being part of the project, we'll always have that available, the technology, because it's actually built in the trucks that we use with sewers and already into some of our bins. It may be in future with the cost we may save from waste going into landfill, we may be increase the number of participants in that level. So it gives us an ongoing future. The equipment, the money left over at the end of the day is relevant, but if we don't use that material, equipment, we won't get to an end result that benefits to us all. So I hope that answers some of your questions.
Yeah,
Thank you, it does. I will wait. Thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cardy, as well. Further questions? Yes, Mr. Yates.
Thank you.
Almost my height. Don Yates, 10 Thompson Road, Success Hill. Which is more important when it comes to a local planning scheme? Are the two maps, the north and south map, more important than the scheme text, or is the scheme text the winner? When there's a discrepancy.
Mr. Buttle, thank you.
Thank you. The scheme maps and the scheme text are both read in conjunction with each other.
And when there's a discrepancy between the two?
Through the Chair, I would need to know exactly what the discrepancy was to be able to provide comment with respect to that question.
Okay. What are the things, one of the small points, we have a thing called a plot ratio, as against plot ratio. It's only a small point, but it's sort of one of those sort of things that sneaks up in the text because someone hasn't been reading it. The second question relates to, again, the Local Planning Scheme 10. The EPA have four levels of public descriptions of waste sites that are not happy sites. And there's another three which are a bit more private. Why are those sort of sites that are not happy with the four different levels not in either the map or the text? And in speaking to the EPA, they list the 300,000 cubic metres at Ashfield, 14 Ivanson Street and other sites in the town of Bassendean that appear not in any of the scheme maps and don't appear in the text. Why not?
Properties that would be listed with the Environmental Protection Authority are separately identified under the relevant environmental protection legislation, and those contaminated sites are listed through the website of the Department of Environment and Regulation.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess just if I was looking at a piece of land and I looked at the maps, it'd be disappointing to say, oh, there's a nice piece of land in the Tonkin Industrial Park, and it says nothing about being under environmental conditions or anything like that, but it's listed with the EPA. It's disappointing that that sort of material and also the heritage listings are not detailed in the Local Planning Scheme 10, either text or in the maps. Thank you.
Mr. Yates, as you know, we're in the process of updating our scheme, so can I encourage you to give that feedback through the Bassendean Map Future process so that when we do amend the scheme, we can take that into consideration?
I think the sadness is, and why, for example, in section 4.6 of the current deemed, the current words to do with the Local Planning Scheme 10, it says there are no environmental issues in Bassendean, section 4.6. And I think that's disappointing that that sits in the scheme text and it's not on the maps either. Thank you.
Could I also suggest, as a former Landgate employee, that if you're looking at any parcel of land, you also do a register of interest search via Landgate, which will allow you to look at any interests on a parcel of land, which is always a useful resource.
Thank you. Yes, sorry, I don't know your name. Is it Mr. Peterson? Yes. Oh, sorry. I had a blank for a minute, sorry.
You've got to get up on your history.
All right. I'll try to make my question.
You have to tell us where you live, even though I do know where you live.
Should I be concerned about that? Gregory Peterson, 8 Carnegie Road, Bassendean. My question is hopefully succinct, but perhaps the staff will not be able to answer it right away. I refer to item 10.5 of tonight's agenda. I note that the report provided as revision 1, July 2017, by Coterra Environment puts forward three options, the first of which has apparently been subsequently modified by the deletion of a proposed floating wetland. For each of these options, how much less phosphorus and nitrogen will enter the Swan River every year as a result of their implementation? I'd say to whoever gets the privilege of answering this question, please show and explain your calculations and identify any assumptions made.
So I think you were correct in your prediction that the staff can't answer that this evening. We'll take it on notice, and I'm sure someone will reply to you
probably Mr. Stuart Dawkins, I imagine.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Moss Johnson, 6 Barton Parade, Bassendean. Is that working?
This is also in regards to item 10.5, and I want to stress that I'm not being negative in the slightest. And there will be, I think, a statement in the, during statement time regarding this as well. Regarding the Bindarring Park project and the Coterra report, a brief story. I had a memorable experience of an open meeting in another local government being held by a Friends of group of their local swamp. The environment officer of that particular local government was there and made a comment that stuck in my mind, that he felt that all of the projects that he was involved with that were truly successful projects had been community driven from the beginning. So my question is, could Friends of groups, local residents, sporting groups, anybody who's involved in a particular area or park actually be involved in the writing of a brief for tenders if we're going to go out and spend a lot of money on producing a report and a plan, so that the actual brief, so that the contractors are actually addressing some of the needs that the community feel are probably more important important?
It's a good question. I'm going to ask our CEO to answer it, because obviously she's the person who deals with tender.
I think procurement and contract management is one of those areas that I think all local governments can get better at, along with community engagement. So certainly open to looking at that. One of the things that we will be working on over the coming months is a new community engagement framework. I guess more or less at the moment we have a number of committees set up. Some of those committees consider scopes of work before they go out to the marketplace, whether they reflect what is required. Obviously internally we have our own processes as well, but I think the engagement model that we're trying to build within the town allows for that early engagement with the community, so that whatever we are seeking from what I call a co-producer or partner reflects what the town, what the community is seeking, and offers value for money in that regard. So I think it's certainly something that we can look to, and I'd be happy to have a follow-up conversation with you, Moss.
Thank you. I know we are happy that the ball is rolling, and we're hoping that during the comment period, the next phase of this plan, that we'll be able to slightly adjust the direction it rolls in.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Okay, well, in that case, we'll move on to 2.2, which is statements by members of the public. So, again, people who would like to speak, you have 3 minutes to speak, just so that there's adequate time for all of those who wish to address council to have their say. So if anybody would like to speak to any of the items on tonight's agenda, now is your opportunity to do so.
Clive Brown, 2 Surrey Street in Bassendean, speaking relation to item 10.4, which is the item that's been withdrawn. This is a statement made on behalf of the Bassendean Community Men's Shed. The Lions Club of Bassendean and later the Bassendean Community Men's Shed has been seeking a men's shed in Bassendean for around 11 years. Right. Don't take that off my 3 minutes. On the 28th of August 2018, Shed members thought a significant step had been taken by Council to facilitate the construction of a men's shed. On that date, Council decided a number of things. It decided to select option 3 for the site configuration as outlined in the report then presented to Council, based on the information and preferences that were then available. It decided to set as a site the May Holman Drive site in Bassendean. And it decided to move forward and get some costings. Option 3 at that meeting related to a decision or proposal to retain the entire block, requiring additional clearing, fill, retaining and fencing by the removal of existing trees and their replacement elsewhere in the block, and was seen as the best value for money proposition. It also involved the development of a prefabricated shed, the detailed design, etc., in relation to that. The briefing note provided to council on that day provided some background, in particular to a decision taken in relation to a councillor's workshop on the 21st of March 2018, and secondly as a decision taken at a council meeting in May 2018 in relation to the development of the shed. Subsequent to the August 2018 council decision, council commenced work on drafting tender documents, and the tender specification was based around the design and build scope, was produced and reviewed by Welga and external consultants, and a request for tender was advertised in the West Australian newspaper on Wednesday the 13th of March and through the town's website and the Facebook. Last week, at the council briefing session, a report was provided, and that report provided for a recommendation in relation to the successful contractor. It also provided some background information that I won't go into in terms of time. It was anticipated that recommendation would be considered this evening, and the item has been withdrawn as advised. We do not know why the item has been withdrawn. It is a mystery. It is assumed it is not being withdrawn for policy considerations. We make that assumption based on previous decisions of council where we would contend that the policy questions have been settled by council already. Further, we make the observation that the Local Government Act provides for the council to make policy decisions and not the officers. And where policy decisions have been made, they are not recountable by the officers.
I just have to ask you to wind up soon.
Okay. I make this point just in closing. The fact that we don't know the reason for this being withdrawn causes speculation. It causes speculation as to whether there are legal reasons as to why it's been withdrawn or whether there are policy considerations. We would consider if there are reasons on policy matters in relation to the withdrawal of this item, then that is wrong. We'll seek a meeting with the CEO and all members of the men's shed to discuss this very matter. But it is concerning to us. It is concerning to us that at the last moment, unless there are legal reasons for this being deferred, that this decision has been taken.
Thank you. And I know it's not a question that you're asking, but I'd just like to respond to assure you that it's not a policy reason that this item has been deferred. We're not at liberty to discuss the issue, but did you want to clarify any further?
Thanks, Renee. And I guess I can't stress enough the value of a men's shed for this community, and that is not in dispute. But I do have an obligation, and it's in the public interest that I withdrew this matter, and the matter will come back to council as soon as is physically possible. Thank you.
And I'd just like to add, I appreciate that when this matter came to our attention that there would be a sense of great disappointment from the men who have been waiting for a long time, and you felt like you were right at the point where that final decision was going to be made. And you know, it's unfortunate that we can't formalise that decision tonight, but as our CEO has just said, as soon as we are able to have it back on the agenda, council will be again attending to it. So. Thank you.
Our tribe will leave now.
We're trustworthy. Thank you, gentlemen.
Could I ask, what's your anticipated time of this inquiry?
As soon as possible.
That's not good enough. Is it? If we're going to be here for another year, we won't be here.
11 years we've been waiting.
Thank
11
you.
Years. We need to know how long it's going to take. I won't be here for sure.
It's a bit like a wedding when you've got the bride's side and the groom's side. I don't know what... Is there anybody else who'd like to speak? Yes, Val.
Val Humphrey, 127 Whitfield Street, Bassendean. Is that coming out of the speaker anywhere?
I can hear you.
Okay. I'm speaking on behalf of the Friends of Bindarring Wetland, Bassendean. And I'm speaking to... I want to let you know that I'm speaking to support the officer's recommendation for item 10.5 on the agenda tonight. We don't want to be divisive tonight by picking up weaknesses that we might perceive in the report, but rather we welcome at last the chance for the report to be released to the community for discussion leading to development. And I think that Moss has preluded that quite well in his question statement. I'd like to acknowledge in advance that there's a delegate here tonight from Coterra for her presentation, and thank you for that. That will be good. I didn't realise until very recently that that would be happening. And I'd like to say that we appreciate the delegate that we appreciate that your report will have been limited by the vision of the brief you were given, and also that the report is largely based on desktop studies. Therefore, we appreciate that there are limitations with that. The outcome so far is that all three of the options presented in the report were rather underdeveloped, or I would consider it to the point of vague. But they do offer us a point from which to spring from now, a foundation upon which to build a greater outcome, and a greater outcome to conduct site-specific studies that can be used as the basis for good designs, and that will in turn lead to the re-establishment of a healthy functioning wetland and a place which will actually warrant the expense of the pathways which are currently proposed in the study. Last year, in anticipation of the release of Coterra's report at the end of the financial year of 2017-18, the Friends of Bindarring Park, in partnership with the Bassendean Preservation Group, conducted a wetland forum at the park, inviting recognised practitioners in wetland management to share their experiences, their experience with us, and hoping that that would be in the perfect timing for then leading into the building on Coterra's report and going forward. That happened in August 2018. Since then, during the financial year of 18-19, the best we've been able to progress things has been to conduct hand weeding in the middle section of the park, while the northern section still languishes in a pattern of herbicide spraying, awaiting a proper plan for its rehabilitation. And that's a matter of concern to many people who are on our friends' mailing lists. They think it's very nice for us to be weeding a bit, which is already not too bad, but they're very concerned about that northern section and are really hungry to see that a design for that progress beyond what is in the Coterra report. However, since that time and during that last year, because we got very revved up with the forum and talking to some of the experts about their experiences and what they thought might work for us, and looking at how the water flowed, etc. Is that my 3 minutes?
It is. You can. I'll give you a little bit longer to finish up. But yeah.
Thank you. So some of our people have put in some very focused efforts looking at the way the wetland is actually working, how the water's moving through, mosquito issues that we can avoid, etc. Studying 40 years worth of aerial photographs, in particular to look at how salt incursion seems to have affected things, and attending workshops and talking with experts in the field. And we'll welcome the opportunity to comment and to share what we've learned in the meantime and for free. We ask that you please put this plan out for comment so that we can finesse it with some good hydraulic and environmental design studies and design, set some priorities and actually make it happen. We recognise that we're a long project because there are actually many parts of it. It's not something we can just apply for one big fabulous grant and set to and it'll all be complete. It's not like that. There's bits all over the place that need special attention and should rightly be handled one by one, and with probably different grant funds available to the different sections as well.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up pretty quickly.
Okay. it won't cross the earth to get a good plan for, with which we can attract grant funds. So let's get the community involved and get started, please.
Thank you. Anybody else? Ms. Jacobson.
Lonnie Jacobson's Barton Parade, Bassendean. I'd like to make a couple of comments on items on tonight's agenda. One about item 10.3, which was the waste study. In case people don't already know, the trucks already do have cameras in them. They can actually already see what you are putting in your bin. So nothing much is going to change there. About item 10.6, which is the verge treatment policy. I'm very supportive of the changes to the policy that are being proposed. I think raised garden beds are fantastic because it means you can amend and improve soils without having to deal with your existing soil. You can cultivate without injuring the tree roots when you've got a mature street tree there, and you can use technology like wicking beds and other water-saving devices to make your gardening a bit more efficient. And I only had another comment about the item 10.5, which is the Bindarring wetland. Hoping that we will have the kind of public feedback that we will be allowed to or enabled to give will be a bit more rigorous than, for example, the recent railway parade bike path feedback, which was tick a box and have 255 characters limit. So, yeah, I'm hoping we can actually be a bit more in-depth and detailed about that when we get there.
Thank you. Really appreciate your comments. Anything else? Okay, thank you everybody for your contribution. We'll move on to item 3, which is attendance apologies and applications for leave. Councillor Quinton, did you have...
Yes, I do, thank you. I would like to apply for a leave of absence from June 10 to June 15.
Well deserved.
Thank you.
Are you moving that motion or are you asking for some more leave?
No, I'm asking for a leave of absence, please. Just a question first. The next River Parks Committee meeting is...
The 4th.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I seek a leave of absence from Sunday the 2nd to the 12th of June.
Okay, thank you very much. Anything further? Was that you?
Yes. It shouldn't impact on things, but the 31st to the 3rd. 31st of May to the 3rd of June.
Excellent. Okay, do we have a mover for the leave? Councillor Hamilton, seconded. Councillor Mikichuk, all those in favour? And that is carried unanimously. Okay, so we're moving on to item 4, which is deputations. And as indicated earlier, we are fortunate to have Rebecca Epworth here with us this evening. So Rebecca is going to be speaking to us about item 10.5, which is the Bindarring Park Wetland Concept Plan. And before Rebecca speaks, I'd just like to make the comment that it is a very precious space. We know that the community values it, but even beyond our community, for you know the broader area of Perth, it's a really important wetland space. And so we want to make sure that we do a good job of that of the plan that we have for that area. So Rebecca is obviously from Coterra. She has, I've got her qualifications here, quite impressive, Rebecca. And she's been asked to speak this evening about the plan and specifically to outline the technical studies, the hydraulic modelling, the environment assessments and other studies that have been conducted and the data that's been used to date to develop the 3 draft Bindarring Park wetland concepts that we have before us. With the overall project objectives to improve water quality, improve ecological and habitat value and to improve access path, connectivity and underutilised space. So, Rebecca, thank you so much for being here. I'm not sure where you want to speak from, but you're very welcome to take a seat at the table or if you have a presentation that you'd like to show, whatever works best for you. And I know there's a lot of interest from members of the community, so some of this information councillors have been fortunate to hear before, but we are under standing orders, so tonight we can... Councillors have the ability to ask questions, but if you have questions as members of the public, please take note of them and you can forward them to us and we can address them after the formal meeting during the week. So thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Okay, no problem. Bye. Thank you for the introduction. I'll just take you through what we were going what we did with the investigations and where we are heading with the concept land. So as we just heard, the objectives were primarily to improve the water quality in the stormwater runoff from the site or to the site, enhance the wetland ecological values, improve amenity of the site, with an end goal to improving water quality discharge to the Swan River. As most of you know, the park is around 10 hectares. The majority of the park is Bindarang wetland. And as we can see from the, that's the wetland map, the DBCA wetland mapping we have on screen there. So it's a varying conservation value from CCW, resource enhancement, wetland, which the classification determines the amount of sort of disturbance that's generally permitted. So Bindarang Park is a discharge point for a portion of Town of Bassendean's stormwater drainage network. This is a figure showing the subcatchments that are currently feeding into the wetland. There are 11 separate discharge points to the park coming from residential and industrial areas and flow directly into the wetlands. As is the case, which is typical for a lot of older stormwater systems, there's minimal treatment upstream, which is, so the first flush events are carrying a lot of the pollutants that typically nowadays would usually be treated prior to getting to an end point. So that's why improving the stormwater quality was one of the main considerations of the scope of work. So our scope was to draw together information from some previous technical studies, and then there were additional technical studies that we undertook with this stage, which I'll go through next, and then to develop three concept designs from that. So the technical studies previously undertaken, primarily by GHD in 2016, was a desktop environmental assessment, weed management plan, flood mapping just of the northern zone. I don't know if, I think you might have some lights that turn off there, but it might be easier to see some of the, on that map it shows the northern zone, the middle zone and the, and the southern zone. That map you're looking at there is the acid sulfate soils. Great, thank you. The acid sulfate soils mapping. They did preliminary acid sulfate soils investigations and drainage network modelling. Now, this study, we undertook survey and flood modelling of the middle and southern zones to pieced together with the northern zone flood modelling that was previously done. We undertook UNDO modelling, which is the Department of Water and Environmental Regulation water quality modelling tool. And then I'll come back to some of that further because I know there were some specific questions around the results of that. And then targeted acid sulfate soils investigation. So in particular, where we were looking at putting some of the stormwater infrastructure, looking at the acid sulfate soils in those areas. Geotechnical investigation and a fauna assessment. So in terms of looking at trying to achieve the original objectives, improving water quality was looked at through that UNDO modelling and the proposals that we've put through in the concept plan with regards to biofiltration or swales or floating wetlands and such. Improving the ecological and habitat value was looked at through the weed management, rehabilitation planting, using native species and things like removing the feral beehives for public safety. and then improving access to achieve that recreational amenity. We looked at improving access, looking at path connectivity, and using that underutilized space. Following our appointment and our agreed scope of work, we did meet on site with friends in Mudaring, and through that process, a discussion about removing the causeway and changes to Highland Street and the hydraulic controls was raised. It wasn't, as you guys are aware, it wasn't in our original scope, but it was requested to have draw out sections in the concept plans. So I just wanted to reiterate that those are sort of a pictorial image only. They haven't been assessed from an environmental perspective or a flood perspective at all. And that's something that I will talk to in depth later with regards to possible future steps, because it was outlined that this is an option that people were interested in learning more about or knowing more about. So concept design one, this was the most intensive water quality treatment proposed, so also the most expensive. It included four biofilters, three swales, floating wetland, gross pollutant trap. For the stormwater quality perspective. I do, later in the presentation, I will go into the specifics of how much nutrients will actually be removed. But this one improved the nutrient loading by, it removed about half of the nutrients. There is weed control and rehab planting in line with the technical studies. Retaining important habitat trees, removal of feral beehives, and then in the pull-out option, it was option to use lot 27 Highland Street as a possibility. The biofilter locations are shown in those orange blobs, I guess, and the swales are shown in the blue. It's a bit hard to see from here. And then there's a floating wetland, is the kind of magenta coloured box within the wetland itself. This has since been discussed, removing this floating wetland option, and so that's something that will be the next step. Now the pass provides circulation around the wetland. This one provides a crossover across the wetland, seating, lookouts, and the paths are sort of situated so that they are pulled away from private property. There's no changes to the hydraulic design in this concept. And when I say hydraulic design, I mean the causeway and the Highland Street, which would change the hydraulics. So concept two is a less intensive water quality treatment. It has only two biofilters and more swales. Biofilters are more effective at reducing nutrients in swales, particularly with regards to phosphorus. These would remove about a quarter of the nutrients, option two. The ecological aspects are the same as the previous option. The paths, you can see that there's no boardwalk proposed and bird hide across the wetland in this option, but otherwise the paths and the connectivity is similar. The pull-out option down the bottom looked at removing the causeway. There was also no floating wetland in that option. concept three. So it was the least intensive water quality treatment, and so therefore the cheapest. It used all swales and no bioretention systems. As a result, it removed very little phosphorus, and it only removed about 17% of nitrogen. There still will be, the modelling we did was primarily focused on the nutrient aspects. There still would obviously be sediment and gross pollutant and hydrocarbon removal through the soil system, but that isn't assessed with the modelling. The amenities are also similar to option one, and the ecological and the path connectivity are also similar. This one reintroduces the crossover and the bird hive. The pull-out option in this one removes the causeway and Highland Street, so it completely alters the hydraulic controls. This is a bird's eye perspective of the some of the works. This includes the crossover across the wetland and the bird hide that the options one and three indicated. So that's what that would look like. Okay, so with regards to the water quality treatment, as I touched on earlier, we use the Undo tool, which is the Department of Water and Environmental Regulation assessment tool specifically designed for WA. It assesses nutrients, and the stormwater infrastructure you use provides a removal efficiency. So as you can see, we model the current scenario, and it produces a nutrient export rate in kilograms per hectare per year that is currently entering the wetland. Now, the three options show how much nutrient removal there is. So as I touched on earlier, option one reduces about half of the nutrients. Option two removes about a quarter. And option three removes about 17% of nitrogen and very little phosphorus. Because of the fact that there's no bio filters in those in that option. The what has been touched on about removing the floating wetland from option one, that would remove the efficiency or somewhat of option one. So where that would land would be somewhere in between option one and two, but that work is still yet to be done. These are indicative costs provided for the three options. Again, these would probably alter some, they would alter somewhat because of the some requested changes to the media for media for the pathways and removal of some of the pathways. So this is based on the current concepts. The exclusions, obviously, because those draw out options that were provided in all of the options have not been assessed, these costs do not include any of those aspects. Removal of the causeways, modifications to Highland Street, the approvals process, or indeed any of the engineering and ongoing maintenance. So with regard to future work and options, as I touched on earlier, after the scope and commissioning was undertaken, it was raised about removal of the causeways and Highland Street and possible inclusion of habitat islands. So these haven't been assessed. The causeway, so what I will comment on is what some of the possible implications could and will be. With removing those hydrological controls, Highland Street and the causeway, as you can see from that flood mapping there, those controls act as a choke on the water. So if you open that up, it will obviously change the hydrology of the wetland. That water that you currently see in the middle section, you know, is likely to not be held back by the controls once that's all opened up. So in terms of the approvals process would be the first step and would be extensive. There would need to be consultation with DBCA, DEWA, EPA, Department of Fisheries. And the investigations and consultation, just to identify that undertaking that does not guarantee that the project would be deemed environmentally sound or what have you. So it the investigations could be undertaken and it could, any of those departments could still, so it's not a guarantee basically is what I'm trying to reiterate there. So that's a lot of words, so I'll go through these, but this is some of the things at sort of first glance what would need likely need to be assessed with the removal of Highland Street or the causeway. Firstly, flood modelling. So removing those, obviously the modelling to date has those hydraulic controls in place. Changing the flood regime, you need to assess any potential impact to existing housing or the surrounds. Secondly is a wetland water balance on the non-flood water levels. So how those level changes may impact existing vegetation and ecology, because opening that up will change the existing water regime. For example, the northern wetland may drain a lot quicker and therefore end up drier than the current conditions. The vegetation we're currently seeing or aquatic fauna in that location would be adapted to the current regime. So by changing it, that may have impacts. Contaminated land assessment for the causeway. It's our understanding that there's possibly uncontrolled fill there. So that would require assessment and then management and removal of contaminated land. With regards to the actual sort of construction work of removing a causeway and the road, you have to look at potential nutrient mobilisation issues. So once you start moving all those sediments around, you mobilise the nutrients that are currently bound in the sediments and release all of those phosphorus, which could cause eutrophication and algal blooms in either or both the wetland and the Swan River. So that would require assessment and management. The same for sediment pollution risk. So that once you start digging things up, there's going to be sediments. So you'll have to assess the potential of smothering downstream macro invertebrates and aquatic vegetation and how that could be managed if it could. And potential for acid sulfate soils exposure, because this is in a high acid sulfate soils area. Any sort of digging and dewatering will require management. And then the salinity impact. So this changes in salinity could cause an adverse impact on the ecology. And this is something that is a more of a long-term implication. So the salinity changes would be a sort of permanent change to the wetland and the wetland dynamic. And so it can't be sort of managed as such. It would need a ecological and hydrological assessment to determine whether the wetland and ecology would be adversely impacted. The other big aspect from a approvals perspective is that it would likely require a referral from the EPA to the EPA under Section 38 of the Environmental Protection Act for potential significant impact to CCWs and REWs. So the potential impact to a CCW or REW, which this wetland is, includes clearing or filling or excavation. So in the action of taking out the causeway and the Highland Street, you would need to excavate a wetland. So to go through the referral process, environmental management plan is required. That would involve various assessments, likely the ones that I've just gone through previously. It could either be deemed not assessed or require a formal assessment or proceed. So not assessed means a project can, the EPA won't assess it, the project can proceed under the normal planning approval processes. So all of those other agencies that I mentioned before and their approval processes. A formal assessment means that the EPA would also be assessing it and further extensive work and investigations will be required. It's quite a lengthy process and it can take sort of 18 months as an approximation. Thank you.
Really appreciate that. Are there questions at councillors? Councillor Brown.
Thank you. Under these proposals, will the wetland continue to dry out and be muddy rather than the contained water?
Yes. So it doesn't change the hydraulic aspects of the wetland. The drying out, the only way to sort of remedy that would be to introduce another water supply.
The purpose of the floating island is?
Floating wetlands are just incredibly efficient at removing nutrients, so it was another mechanism to add to the most effective way to remove nutrients, because their root zone hangs down in the water, so they can often get a lot more surface area than the biofiltration and the
It obviously leads me to the next question, is if it does dry out and we do include the floating wetland option, is it likely to take root into the bed of the wetland?
I guess it could be a possibility, yes. Yeah.
Thanks.
Councillor Hamilton.
And then Councillor. My question was very similar to that last one from Councillor Brown, that a floating wetland, if it's drying out every summer, is this potentially something that will not be effective, that will die after the first summer? That's my question on that one as well, because it does tend to dry out in summer.
Yeah. I think it would... It would be something that you'd need to manage when you're designing the wetland and what vegetation you're using. If there was appropriate nutrient-stripping vegetation which can withstand a longer duration without water, but yes, it could be a risk.
Councillor Mikichuk and then Councillor Wilson.
Thanks for your presentation, Rebecca. Just a couple of questions. With the removal or potential removal of the floating wetland, should council and community wish to still have that level of nutrient removal, are there other options that could be incorporated into the plan to recoup what you're saying may be lost?
Yeah. The reason why on that option we included 4 biofilters and 3 swales was because the majority of the inflow was coming at those 4 points, so it was targeting the main the main sources of water. The where we put swales were the more minor inflow points. We could put biofilters at all of the points, all seven of them, and that would improve the removal efficiency. It would, I guess, be a question as to whether the removal efficiency is worth the additional cost of the biofilter. So that could be an option that is looked at in a sort of weighing up of options.
Sure.
But yeah, other than introducing more biofilters, it starts getting difficult beyond that point to have alternatives.
Yeah, thank you. And you mentioned, so there'd be quite a lot of extra investigative studies to understand the impacts of a potential removal of the causeway. Can you put any kind of ballpark dollar value on, you know, what that would require?
For the approvals process?
And, well, really I'm thinking the modelling firstly and approvals.
Yeah. I did actually have I'd like to just prefix this on, these are a bit of a huge stab in the dark.
I'm just asking for
Hang on, let me just find my notes. I did have a bit of a sort of stab in the dark at it. I can't comment on the actual removal of Highland Street or the causeway in terms of engineering works, because we'd need a civil engineer to comment on that. And also with the removal of Highland Street, there's the traffic implications and the power, all of the services. And so those, to be honest, the environmental cost would probably be, approvals cost would probably be fairly minimal in comparison to the engineering of those.
Sure.
But all up, I'd say you're talking about $500,000 in environmental approvals. You've got
Does that include the modelling?
So flood modelling, about maybe say $50,000 to $80,000. Wetland assessment, including water balances, fauna, veg, invertebrate surveys, anywhere between $50,000 and $100,000. Contamination, the removal costs alone, you're looking at about $40,000 or $50,000 just to take it to a landfill. The DSI, PSI monitoring, on-site supervision of that contamination, probably around $100,000. Nutrient management and sediment pollution and the nutrient transport and sediment transport modelling. That one, again, it's so variable and so dependent on so many matters, but maybe, you know, $100,000. The ASS. You need to do dewatering management plans. You need to put in treatment basins. You need DBCA approval. The treatment basins have all of the lime and aspects. $100,000. Salinity intrusion modelling, I'm not sure at all. I couldn't even put, because I don't do that personally.
Yeah.
But yes, so.
That gives a rough idea.
Yeah.
And just one last question from me. There was different discussions about this kind of a weir system there now and whether that could be made more effective and about salinity intrusion. Did you have any thoughts or comments on kind of that proposal or...?
The weir system now, as I understand it, and looking at aerial photos, I think it goes back about 15 or 20 years, I think. And then they removed a couple of blocks. Do you mean like in terms of possibly removing it completely or...?
No, there was discussion about retaining or improving on a system.
Okay. I guess at the moment it's sort of, because there's been some blocks removed and things, it's not functioning as it was originally designed for. I'm not sure about the background of why. Improving on you can put in sort of sluices and gates, and you can do salinity modelling where there's you know, automated systems where gates go up and down, and you can control dilution aspects. I guess it depends what you want the end result to be. So without knowing much about the current weir and what it was sort of proposed for, I can't provide much more on that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Thank you.
Councillor Wilson.
Thank you. So one of the options that you presented on would involve the inclusion of an engineered crossover or walkway across the middle of the... So what sort of approvals would be required to construct one of those?
It would have to be something that we'd need to look at. Look at more in detail. There would be some approvals required.
And would the costs of those approvals have been included in the estimates for the cost of the total project that was on a previous slide?
I'm sorry, I can't remember. Okay. I can look it up and get back to you on that.
So I guess further to Councillor Mikichuk's question about weirs, it's been suggested by some people in the community that if a weir was to be constructed on or around the area where that walkway was, mm-hmm. to maintain a freshwater level upstream of that all year round, would that be able to be done as a part of the same approvals process as in the walkway, or would that be separate?
Putting in the weir where it currently is, or altering the weir where it currently is?
Putting a weir in where you would be putting in the walkway and the gazebo feature as per the slide.
Halfway through the wetland?
Hmm.
Yes, it could be included in the same assessment. Hmm. It would be quite at that point, because it's the widest part of the wetland, it would be sort of more significant. You see what I mean? Because it's
presumably the walkway is going across the widest part of the wetland.
Anyway. Oh no, I just mean because a weir alters the hydrology and.
Yes.
So yeah. Councillor Quinton had a question.
Sorry, I still have two follow-up questions.
Okay.
If that's okay, Your Worship. So if a weir was to be installed across that section to maintain a freshwater level all year round, or at least higher than it currently is, would that have flow-on effects for the assumptions about the hydrology that have been put in place there for the removal of the causeway or for modification of Highland Street?
So when you're talking about putting a weir across there to improve the freshwater, do you mean to keep water in the...
To hold a water level upstream higher than is currently the case. Yes.
Okay. And would it have impact on the...
recommendations that you've made about the potential risks in removing the causeway and remodelling Highland Street?
Yes, I mean, putting in a weir in that location would be... would change the hydrology and environment fairly significantly as well. So,
and was that looked at all in any of the possible scenarios?
No, the weir was not part of the scope.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Quinton.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering if there was a suggestion from a member of the community tonight that we don't do it all at once, that we might have to consider some kind of staged approach, mm-hmm. to doing a little bit at a time. So is there a priority list of what absolutely needs to be done first?
Mm. I guess it would be, because going back to those sort of three, those objectives, it would be dependent on where the priorities of the town are. If the first priority is to improve the water quality, then, I mean, yes, definitely, stage approach is completely possible. So, you know, if the priority was deemed to improve the water quality, then not only could you could go do through and do all of them, or you could just do, you know, one at a time, focused on the areas which are bringing in the most stormwater. If it's to look at the ecological values, if that would be the priority, then you could go through with rehabilitation and weed removal and rehabilitation, and removal of the feral beehives and things like that. If it's the recreational value, then you could go through and do the paths. So definitely, depending on the priorities, it could all be separated or segmented. Yeah.
Great. And I noticed in the concept plan that the swales and biofilters are only around the actual wetland. What if we had some further out? Because I think that's one of the recommendations from the Department of Biodiversity Conservation and Attraction was to have, well, they'd call it wetlands, but
yep,
we could do them further out. What kind of impact would that... I mean, you said the more we have, the better, obviously.
Yes, yeah, definitely. No, and that's... I mean, the better urban management that we design these days is to try and treat and manage water as close to source as possible, and deal with it higher up in the catchment. So if there is land available in those the sub-catchments that I had at the beginning of the... as I said, there were 11... No, sorry, 11... No, there we go. So there are a lot of subcatchments. If within those areas we can find space to put swales and biofiltrations prior to getting down to the wetland, definitely. And I guess that also goes back to Councillor's query before about if we remove the floating wetland, how could we enhance it? Is that by putting more up in the catchment, that could be another, yeah.
Okay. And so when we go out for our community consultation, is there a price tag we can put on these things where we can say, if we have 7, it'll cost this much, but if we have 5, but 2 of these, it'll cost this much? Is there a breakdown of an approximate cost of what each thing will be? Because $1.6 million is just like a huge amount of money.
Yeah, and a lot of that is also to do with the actual paths and the connectivity from a stormwater infrastructure perspective.
Which is why I'm asking about the staged approach of priorities.
Yeah.
Is that if we need to do it, what is the most important thing for the first year, and then...
Yes, I don't know it off the top of my head, but I could... I could find a rate sort of per square metre... and then I guess we could equate it back to how big the catchment is to how much, to give you a rough idea. But it depends, because the size of the biofiltration area is dependent on the size of the catchment. So it's not sort of as simple as if you have one biofilter, it'll cost $10,000.
Right.
Because the biofilters are all individually designed.
Mm-hmm.
So... But I could work something out, probably.
Okay. Councillor Hamilton?
Thank you very much for being patient with us.
No problem.
In your first presentation, I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you indicated that there was one set of drains that were depositing far more pollution than any of the others. And I believe those drains may be coming from the industrial area, perhaps?
That was just from an observational perspective of when we were on site, and it was with regards to gross litter and gross pollutants, which all of the options proposed a gross pollutant trap at that location, which was in the middle section of the wetland. There's a large stormwater pipe and visible gross pollutants.
Okay, so
it doesn't. So gross pollutants doesn't necessarily translate to also mean a lot of nutrient.
Yep.
But so because the industrial area, residential areas typically actually have more nutrients in industrial because of all the fertilizer and things, whereas industrial tend to have more.
No, thank you for that. I just need a refresher on that because I remember something about it. But if we asked to have a breakdown of a stage development and we specified what the main priority was for the town,
mm-hmm.
would it be costly or difficult to actually give back to the town a breakdown of a stage development and how that might look or not?
No, I think, sorry, it's been a couple of years since the report, but I'm pretty sure we've done a detailed breakdown of the cost, so I think it would just be a matter of pulling those out.
Well, for instance, I was going to say, if, for instance, the town said to you, water quality is our priority,
yep. then I could tell you how much it is for
that. And I would like to know what that entails. And I'm assuming it would be all the biofilters and the
yep.
swales and things like that, rather than pathways. So, so I guess what I'm asking is it possible to have a vision of what stage one might be if we say to you water quality is most important?
Yep.
And then whether that goes out of consultation or not.
Okay, we might have one last question from Councillor Gangell.
Yes, thank you. I'm just wondering, I'm not a huge fan of rolling things out in stages because sometimes, whilst the best intentions are there, the latter stages potentially never happen. So I'm just wondering what would be the time frame if we wanted to get everything achieved from the start of the project to completion, what would that time frame be? Would that be over a year or...?
Is that assuming option one?
Yes, yeah.
So not looking at Highland or the Causeway or...?
No, well, obviously if we wanted to achieve all the path and connectivities and everything like that within the plan.
I'm not entirely sure about the pathways,
yep. mm-hmm.
To be honest, because that's our partner, EPCAD, mm-hmm. who we did it with. They're the landscape consultants. I really don't know how to comment
yep.
on their,
okay.
their side of things. Mm-hmm. I would probably say maybe 2 to 3 years.
Okay. So in any case, it's going to have to be over subsequent budgets anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you so much. You've been incredibly gracious, especially being here still at 8:30 at night. Really appreciate that, and I think probably members of the community would have found that really informative as well. So really appreciate your input, and thank you again.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, councillors, we're on item 5, which is confirmation of the minutes. Do we have a mover for officer recommendation 5.1A that the minutes of the meeting be received? Councillor Mikichuk has moved, seconded Councillor Quinton. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. And 5.1B that they're an accurate record, moved by Councillor Quinton, seconded Councillor Mikichuk. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Excuse me. So item 6 is announcements. I just wanted to bring people's attention to the fact that the Ideas Hub now has the two models from Dr. Anthony Duckworth-Smith, so it's a great opportunity for people to go and experience that interactive opportunity. And also that we'll have our mobile Ideas Hub in various sections of the community over June. So in Ashfield on Saturday the 1st of June, Hawaiian Shopping Centre on the 8th of June, and Eden Hill on the 16th of June. The details are on our website. But also that on the other Saturdays, it will also be open to accommodate people who aren't able to attend during the week between 10 and 2, and that's largely thanks to Councillor Hamilton's generosity with her time. And, of course, during the markets when we have a lot of activity on the street. Item 7 is petitions, which we don't have any tonight. Item 8 is declarations of interest. So, Councillor Brown.
Yes, Your Worship. In respect to item 10.8, I have a proximity interest I'd like to declare.
Thank you very much. There's no
This is deferred from the previous meeting, so we'll move on to the reports. So these are the items that I currently have coming out of en bloc. 10.5, 10.6, 10.7, 10.8, 10.12, 13, 14, 18, 11.1, 11.2, 13.1, 13.2. Are there any additional items?
Did you say 10.8?
Yes. Can I say again?
Yeah, 10.2, thank you.
Yep. Anything else?
Did we 10.18 is that 10.18 is out? Yep, yep, thank you.
Okay, if there's nothing further, I have a mover for the rest to be carried on block. Councillor Quinton moved, seconded Councillor Mikichuk. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. So item 10.2, this is the establishment of an MOU between the Department of Communities and the Town of Bassendean. Councillor
Gandra,
did you have...
Yes, I just got a question, Your Worship. Very supportive of this, as people would know. I'm just wondering, it just says in there that we don't actually outline which areas specifically we're looking at, and the town centre can be defined very broadly. So I was just wondering... what particular component of the town centre we're looking at and how that will be defined?
Certainly. I think it was the HESTA report from about 6 years ago that did an assessment of a number of land parcels that either are owned by the town or Crown land that is vested in the town that are potential sites that could be developed. There's a couple off the top of my head. One is the Wilson Street car park, which is vested in the town, which could potentially be developed. It's in a premium location in terms of a transit-oriented development. There is also the fire station on the hill, which is actually the property of the Department of Fire and Emergency Services. There's certainly interest there in selling that land. It's something that Department of Communities are keen to look at the commercial viability of in terms of, is that a deal that they could make work from a unit cost perspective? It's in a prime location in terms of, again, transit-oriented development and town centre. So it would certainly assist the town in regards to the economic activation of the area and also those social outcomes. So there are a number of other sites that we're yet to explore. They're just two that we're currently looking at, but honestly it is a long process. Anyone that's been involved in development knows that it's usually a two-year design, two-year development, but ahead of all of that, there's the commercial viability assessment and obviously looking at the market and whether there's an appetite at the moment.
Can I just comment as well? Conscious that we're doing the Bass and Dream Our Future process as well, so tying that and the messages we get from our community into whatever we're
most
discussing
definitely.
With Department of Communities. Do you have any other questions, Councillor Gandra?
No, I know, that was, very, very fond of development in the town centre. So.
That will come as no surprise to anybody in this room. Are there any other questions?
Yes. Just reiterate my question from last week at the briefing session that we did ask about community consultation, that once there is some sort of idea that there would be consultation with our community to get feedback on.
Absolutely, and I've tried to reflect that in the MOU. It's a conversation I've certainly had with the Department of Communities. So there's a little bit of prep work and, I guess, exploring prospects that needs to happen. But as soon as there's a potential idea there, I think it's bringing it back to council.
Great. So if there's no further questions, we have a mover for the officer recommendation. Councillor Wilson, seconded Councillor Hamilton. Anybody against? All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. So we'll move on to 10.5 now, which is the Bindarring Park wetland concept. So we've just asked quite a number of questions of Rebecca, but are there any other questions that councillors have at this point for our staff? No? Okay. We have an officer recommendation before us. Do we have a mover for that recommendation? Councillor Mikichuk, is there a seconder? Councillor Gangel, is there anyone against? All those in favour?
That's carried unanimously. 10.6, which is the draft verge treatment policy and draft verge management policy. Any questions to begin with? Councillor Quinton, I believe you had something you wanted to raise.
Yeah, just thank you, Phil, for sending through that email today. Could you, in your email today, you talked about, we're talking about the 2 metre buffer, which I think has been in the existing policy anyway. And these are specifically for streets that don't have a footpath on either side. So the idea of the policy is that people in a wheelchair or with a pram or anything like that who want to walk on the verge have that 2 metre buffer. But, you know, it might take up half of the verge to do that, in which case we're trying to give people empowerment. So I just wanted to clarify in your email today that you phrased it as... sorry, I'm just trying to get the right wording, exact wording that you had. Safe access for pedestrians. What would that look like? And how would that conversation happen with the adjacent landowner in terms of providing that safe access for pedestrians? So essentially, if we take the 2 metres out and make it a guideline instead, what would it look like? How would we have that conversation?
Thanks, Councillor Quinton. Through the chair, that's a difficult question to answer, as we have a large variety of street types. So we have a town centre, we have streets close to the river, we have cul-de-sacs, we have district distributors. So the requirement for pedestrian access varies. So I suppose that's why I tried to suggest in my email that if we handled it at a higher level in a policy and then provided guidelines to guide us in the next level of detail, then that would assist. If everyone planted out their verge, then 100%, then that would be difficult for people to walk down the street. So, but in most cases, people in every house in the street doesn't do that. So one has to apply a balance, and if we try and, you know, I suppose we're a little bit stuck in trying to provide technical advice and to provide all-encompassing answers to every type of street. It's quite difficult, but it really needs to become a reasonable type of assessment. Now, that can be open to question as something that's I might consider something different, something reasonable, that you might consider something unreasonable. So it is quite difficult to encapsulate, I suppose, in a policy. It needs to provide for safe access for pedestrians, people who are mobility challenged, children, cyclists, older type of cyclists, not so confident cyclists. So it does become, we could keep going down into further and further detail until we manage every scenario out.
And how would we have that conversation with the adjacent landowner?
I suppose our approach has been to have a set of rules, and if they comply to the rules, then it's allowable. And so we've nominated a 2 metre, we could bring that down to 1.5, but we have nominated a 2 metre, and we could, as I said, bring down a 1.5 accessway that goes through. That's quite definable. If it's not an issue, then we simply don't address it on a verge. So
thank you.
Councillor Hamilton?
With this 2 metre width that we're supposedly leaving for future creation of footpaths, there seems to be some contradiction happening here with our footpaths, because basically you're saying from the curb 2 metres back that we shouldn't be having people planting in that space. However, I believe our footpath policy indicates that we shouldn't be doing footpaths right up abutting to the curb. Now, there's good reason for that policy to exist, in that with street tree planting, the original idea was that we would plant closer to the curb of the street so that the shade of the tree could shade not only the road but also the footpath going next to the fence line of the property. Now, I would bring to Council's attention that we have issues now with trees growing close to fences, which may indeed be causing issues. So I have some problems here with the fact that we're following a footpath policy. Well, we're not following. We have a footpath policy that exists. Well, I'm trying to understand why we've got the 2 metre space from the curb when it actually doesn't follow our footpath policy, but we're still putting footpaths in right next to the curb.
Thank you.
Thanks. Correct. A tree could cause damage to a fence, and a tree could cause damage to a road. And it's important that we plant them so they don't. If a cyclist is riding down the road and a tree root has pushed the road level up and the cyclist hits it and falls off, they could go in the path of a car and hurt themselves. So there's always an issue in planting trees with infrastructure. The tree can be planted in such a way where it is 2 metres from the road and still provide shade for the pavement, over the pavement, canopy for the pavement, so that is achievable. Which I do believe we're trying to hedge our bets here, in that we want people to be able to stop on the side of the road and open their car and get out onto the verge. So we have put the 2 metres next to that access way next to the road. I do like to have footpaths near the boundary so we're not having kids on the side of the road. So we are in a contradictory environment in which is best and which is most beneficial for the town. But it's important that it's important to note that a tree can be planted within 2 metres from the edge of the road and it will still provide a canopy. So I think we're talking about two different things, trees and shrubs. So we don't want the shrubs on the edge of the road, but the tree 2 metres from the road is okay.
Okay, so I'm going to follow on with this line of thought, because during the report and during conversation, we all know now that cyclists who are unsure on the road can now drive right on footpaths. So if we're going to have a tree route that might lift up part of a road, we certainly will have a tree route that might lift up part of a footpath if it's planted right next to a footpath. So I find this a little bit of at odds, because to my mind, if we're doing Councillor, 2 metres...
Do you have a question, Councillor Hunter?
Yeah, I am. I just don't understand, number one, with such a small town and so many back streets, why we have to go 2 metres. So I would prefer to go 1.5 as a max. But I don't know that the 2 metres from the curb complies with our other policies. It seems to be a contradiction.
Yes, please do.
So just a further comment. Council, as you mentioned, we've got a path network policy that talks about the preferred location of the footpath being adjacent to the property line. And on occasions, you're right, we have if you look around the town, there are places where the footpath has been located next to the curb line. But council has got a policy, adopted a program of implementing constructing footpaths for every street within the town. So I think probably under the circuit, there's a program that council has, and we bring that into the budget process every year. And I think that if you've got a street which has a footpath, then when Phil said, common sense, the guideline would take precedence. The officer would look at and see, oh look, there's already a footpath down that street, and in that particular case, a common sense approach can be taken because there's an area where people can get off the road and they can walk down that footpath. And I think that's what Phil's trying to explain, is that there's putting it into a guideline will actually provide better support for staff than actually being more stipulating it in an actual policy, because it gives a staff a bit more flexibility when they're looking at actually a potential prospect of somebody requiring landscapes on their birch.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Okay, are there any other questions? Okay, so we have an officer recommendation in front of us. Do we have a mover for that recommendation? Councillor Quinton, seconder. Councillor Mikichuk, is there anybody against? All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. 10.7, this is the review of the local law activities on thoroughfares and trading in thoroughfares and public places. So the purpose of the proposed law is to provide council with the mechanism to control activities in thoroughfares, to protect the natural environment and to have the ability to ensure that crossovers and verge treatments are properly maintained. And the effect of the proposed thoroughfares and public places local law will enable the town of Bassendean to issue permits or notices for the local law to be effective. Are there questions on this item? Okay, do we then have a mover for the officer recommendation? Councillor Gangell, seconded. Councillor Brown, anyone against? All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. 10.8, so Councillor Brown has declared a proximity interest. And councillors might be aware that I've circulated an alternative motion for your consideration, and just for the benefit of others in the room, I'll read that out. So that council, one, recognises that the outcomes for the Ashfield Parade foreshore restoration project that were presented to residents of Ashfield Parade in 2005 and the ultimate outcome delivered were not in complete alignment. Two, request the CEO to write to all residents of Ashfield Parade to acknowledge this discrepancy. And three, undertakes a risk assessment of the temporary fence that was installed as part of the foreshore restoration project to assess whether there are sections that are no longer required and could be removed. So are there any questions from councillors on this item? No. Councillor Gangell?
Your Worship, I'm just wondering, just noticing your point three to the officer recommendation point three,
yep. It
actually says, the officer recommendation actually says, including the opportunity for alternative measures, whereas yours doesn't give the option for alternative measures to be considered.
Well, I'd be very happy to replace point three in my alternative with point three in the officer recommendation, if that
Thank
would
you.
Make you happier. Amy, are you... Councillor Hamilton, do you have a question?
Actually, no, that addresses my question.
I just want to second your amendment.
Okay, so I've moved the alternative motion. Councillor Mikichuk wants to second. Is there anybody against? All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Would someone like to invite Councillor Brown back into the room?
Can I just make sure that's with the officers or point three in it?
Yes. Yeah, so, Amy... Just so we're clear, that was point one and two that I gave you, but point three from the officer recommendation. You seem to have lost Councillor Brown. We'll move on to 10.12, which is the People Services Committee meeting. Any questions on this item? Welcome back.
Thank you.
So we're on item 10.12, which is the People Services Committee meeting. Just seeking any questions at this point. Okay, do we have a mover for the officer recommendation? Councillor Quinton, seconded. Councillor Brown, anyone against? All those in favour? Carried unanimously. 10.13, which is the Town Assets Committee meeting. Any questions? Okay. Not sure why these are out of one block, but would someone like to move the officer recommendation? I will. Is there a seconder? Councillor Brown, is there anybody against? All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. 10.14, which is accounts for payment. Councillor Hamilton, did you have a question on this item?
Yep. Just give me a minute. Okay, on page 5 of attachment 10, I note the town spent $80,000 approximately for street tree pruning by Beaver Tree Services in April. And I'm wondering if this figure is confined to street verge trees or does it include other trees?
I think I'll need to take that on notice. I would think it was street trees, but I'll need to take it on notice.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I was also, if you are going to take that, I was wondering if we could find out annually how much we spend on tree pruning.
Yes.
And lastly, can I find out if this payment figure includes pruning trees on private property? And if so, why is the town paying for work on private property? I'm just curious because I've had an inquiry from a resident. So, page 6, what have we got here? Top of the page, I note that we've done a payment to Comestibles for $2,566, which was the catering company outside the town. This works out to around about $60 a head. I'm wondering if it's possible, if it's at all possible, to source supply from local businesses that may offer a better value for money and assist in the circular economy with expenditure in the town?
Well, that's not me.
Not me?
Not me.
Okay.
I'm happy to take that on notice. I, having had conversations with some of my staff, I understand we're somewhat constrained some nights of the week.
Okay.
And sometimes where, unfortunately, we do have to go outside the
parameters
of the town of Bassendean.
No, that's fine. I just wasn't sure, and I was hoping that maybe we can just generate a little bit more business for locals.
Certainly.
So, page 8. bottom of page 8, bottom third of the page, we're spending about $1,430 on super turf for line markings for Bassendean Oval. And I have had comments from some other clubs that they don't get the same service. So I'm just curious as to why some clubs get this and others don't.
Would that be you, Mr. Hackett?
In terms of line marking of Bassendean Oval, that's an activity that we have undertaken as part of our licence agreement that we have with Swan Districts Football Club for about 80 years, I think. Certainly we could consider that within our licence agreement.
Okay, no, that's fine. I wasn't sure why we were doing it there. Bottom of page 8, I note we have 3 lawnmowers from the Honda shop at $4,824 marked for seniors. I was curious as to why the volume of mowers was required for seniors.
It's one of the areas of service that we're very proud of. Our Seniors and Disability Services does a lot of garden maintenance in and around
the town.
Oh,
okay, so it's for private homes. Sorry, I thought it was just for our...
that would be a lot of lawnmowers, yeah.
I was just thinking a lot of lawnmowers. At the bottom of page 10, we've got $1,143 fines, Sheriff's Office. Curious, what have we been doing wrong?
Again, just through the chair. Do you want to?
Through the chair.
Yeah.
Once we issue fines, once the rangers issue fines, if they aren't collected, they get sent to fines enforcement.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Bottom of page 10 again. We've got a charge of $18,180 for vehicle leases applicable to the month of April. Just a little general inquiry, are we looking at long term perhaps reducing the volume of leases?
Yes.
And
I've got a question. Thank you.
Okay.
just let Councillor Hamilton finish.
The CEO nodded, so I'm assuming
yes,
my answer.
Yes, right, I can assure you that we are rationalising our vehicle fleet, and certainly all senior appointments in the future will not have a vehicle included in their package.
Excellent.
Councillor Gangell.
Yes, thank you, Councillor Hamilton, for bringing that to my attention. I'm just wondering, if my understanding, I have seen, I believe, very exciting in the town. We've got a bike repair centre now on Old Perth Road. But my question is actually in relation to the vehicle movement in the town and the leasing. I believe we have 4 e-bikes, which we purchased for $10,000. I was just wondering, which staff have been allocated the use of those 4 e-bikes? Or has that not been determined as yet? Just very keen to see what's happening with these 4 e-bikes we purchased for $10,000 and how much use they've actually had.
I might pass that one to Mr. Haggard.
The intention is not to allocate them out to individual staff, but to make them pool vehicles available for staff to use as required in and around the town.
So,
Councillor Gangell, they only arrived, I think, yesterday or something, so they haven't been used at this point in time.
Well, I'm not sure they're charged yet.
And where will they be stored?
Certainly we'll be storing them in-house in the library store, and they will be out on the bike racks across the road initially, and we'll be looking to our customer service team to provide a signing in and signing out system.
Okay, thank you.
Great purchase.
They are charged because I rode one down the street today.
Oh.
Okay, so if there's no more questions, do we have a mover for the officer recommendation? Councillor Brown, seconded Councillor Quinton. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. So 10.18, implementation of council resolutions. Councillor Quinton.
Yes, thank you. Can I inquire about ROC 18?
What page?
Sorry, that would be easy, wouldn't it? 66 of 75. This is my notice of motion to provide more winter shelter for the street doctor down at Ashfield. Great, thank you. Thank you for letting me, for saying that all the items are being acquired. Can you just give us an update about when that would be installed before the rains come?
Yes, it certainly will be happening this financial year. I'm surprised to see that this item is in the recommended for deletion because the all of those works have yet to be completed.
Oh, should we remove it from the list then?
They're on order, but they're yet to be completed. I probably would have ordinarily put it up after they were completed.
Okay, can we remove that?
Have you got
please?
The item number? It's the very last one on the list.
ROC 18 64882.
Councillor Brown, did you have one as well?
Oh, Councillor Brown, go first.
Thank you. Removal from the list of ROC 17.
Which page, sorry?
54543.
Which page?
Page 65.
I was going to ask about the same.
At the top. The subject of correspondence, further clarification with yourself and the CEO to clarify and further define it.
Which one is that, Bob?
That's the top one.
Yep, it's
okay. Plan.
Yep, that was the one I asked.
54543.
Yep.
So, Amy, can we please remove that one as well? Have you got the number?
I have.
Yep. Councillor Wilson?
I was going to ask questions about the same item.
Okay, thank you. Any additional ones, Councillor Hamilton?
Page 60, second one down, ROC 17 53219. Mm-hmm. It's got here that. It's marked as a low priority. Hang on, let me just grab this. It's been put on hold due to it's now being a low priority of council. It is understood that this may be further considered through the current review of the town's local planning policies. It's Design WA initiative, so I was just curious as to deleting that, but maybe including it. Is this the state government's design?
Sorry, I'm just answering a question.
I'm not sure what specifically that relates to. Are you aware, Mr. Barton?
64. Off the top of my head, no, I'm not, but I can tell you that Design WA was gazetted on Friday the 24th of May, and now is operational insofar as apartments or multiple dwellings are concerned. So that is now an operative policy document.
Okay. Some of these are just a little bit hard to remember or understand what they relate to, so that's why I asked the question, because I thought it might relate to that, but I wasn't sure. So it's
Councillor Hampton, that's something I've raised with the CEO and the management team, that often the detail in here doesn't allow us to have good visibility of what exactly the motion is, so I believe that will be addressed in future iterations of these reports.
Thank
you.
Unfortunately,
we've got some system issues, but we will furnish you with the full version of the report, which is several pages long. But I guess one of the business rules we've tried to implement is that until the resolution has been fully implemented or is deemed no longer a priority of council, we won't remove it. But it appears that some of these have got through.
Okay, so my next one is page 63, the bottom one, which is ROC 1859093. Now, basically most of the points in that motion have been completed, but there was one point there where I asked for guidelines to guide the design of desired building forms within the Bastine Local Government District, which is a high priority for council, and I think it related to glare from
reflective roof policy, which has not yet been developed.
So can that one come out?
So you've got that, Amy?
59093.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank okay. And just checking. This is one I have no idea really what it is. It's page 64, ROC 1864871, Guildford Road and Kenny Street, Kenny Kathleen Street. It's, all it's got is this issue has been dealt with by a subsequent council.
Resolution.
And I mean, I'm thinking it's the Guildford Road Treats, but I don't know. But I don't know what Kathleen and Kenny Street is.
I don't think it's
isn't
the
that the access
the in relation to the right of way that is within the centre of that street block.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's fine. Oh, dear. That one you've pulled out already. Okay, that's it for me.
Okay, so with those removed, we have a mover of the officer recommendation. Councillor Hamilton, seconded Councillor Brown. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. We move on to notice of motion. So 11.1 is the notice of motion from Councillor Brown in relation to lot 821 52 Villiers Street in Bassendean.
Yes. With this, it's asking for the town to pick up the tab to maintain the park, to do all the maintenance and the like on the park. I just note in the officer's response, there's no cost analysis of what that would be, but there is a issue here that says that there's an issue with it being a contaminated site issue. Just wanting to know, is that impinging on us wanting to do maintenance on that block?
Through the chair, there was a council resolution, you're quite right, there was a council resolution that, and a report which came to council. That highlighted that the Department of Water and Environment had, and Regulations had provided a letter outlining the requirements for a site management plan to be provided, which dealt with the contaminated site. So
the concept plan that was presented to council basically said that the landscaping path was going to be on the surface of the area. They were going to bring soil in to and plant into that that newly planted area so that they wouldn't be disturbing the existing ground. But the Department of Environment and Regulation said there still needs to be a site management plan because there was, I believe it was asbestos or something of that nature, which was contaminated the site. And so, of course, what happens is if you're going to be mowing the area and there's and there might be asbestos fragments, well, you need to have a site management plan as to how you're going to be dealing with that. So we have had some correspondence back from the Department of Planning, Lands and Heritage. Just this week, last week, should I say, suggesting to us that that we tell them what they require to put in the site management plan. But it's in essence, the Department of Environment and Regulations have actually already stipulated what they need to do, and so I'll be writing back to them again and saying the information's already been provided to you, and they need to arrange that work, which is a council resolution.
So basically, we need this management plan to be approved before Asheville can actually start work, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So until we get that approval for that site management plan, Ashokan cannot start work on the lookout.
You're right. Because we need to have that site management plan, and then there needs to be a lease agreement to take over that land on that basis.
I'll let someone else ask questions.
I'd like some clarification around, because obviously there is a desire from Ashfield Can to get some confirmation that we will be able to manage this parcel of land for them to secure the grant money. Pardon?
Yes.
What risk is there to the town at this point in saying that, yes, in principle, we can support that?
The risk to the town is that the town would have, you know, if there was a management order placed and we didn't have that site management plan in place, the risk would be that the town would have to pay for that itself, whereas currently...
So pay for what itself?
A site management plan.
But all we're asking for is that they will...
So if you look at the officer comment,
yeah,
and there's recommendation 7.
Yeah.
And recommendation 7 talks about the Asheville Can Lookout concept plan.
No, I appreciate that, but I'm just unsure how the two are linked, because all we're saying is, with Councillor Brown's motion, is in principle to provide maintenance services, but you're suggesting, I believe, that if we support this, then that is potentially going to obligate us to fund a management plan. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the currently the land has not been provided. We don't have a management order or a lease over that land, so you'd be actually undertaking maintenance to land which is not owned by or managed by the town of Bassendean.
If I may, obviously.
Councillor Brown?
Thank you.
Just before you do, I think. Do you want to ask your question?
If that's okay.
Sorry, Councillor.
I just wanted to get some clarity on, and I apologize that I don't know the answer to this. I guess the rationale behind wanting the in principle support for the maintenance at this point, a WAPC proposing not to look after it in the interim. While things are finalised?
Yes, again, maintenance. Who maintains it now? In the report it says that Ashcan would do some maintenance. So what specifically are they asking the town to do that the Planning Commission and Ashcan are going to do?
Thank you, Your Worship, if I may. Obviously seeking Amos Johnson spoke recently about the community driven projects and successful that. This is a community driven project fostered by Ashfield Can, my other hat as Vice President.
Declaring your impartiality interest.
The in principle is a non-binding agreement that should the WA Planning Commission, as they have said to me and other interested parties at on-site meetings, they have no issue, it is fit for purpose for what we want to achieve. And that will be a pathway which has already been commenced. Some earthworks have already been commenced by the WA Planning Commission. It will then consist of blanket planting of low water tolerant, drought attractant shrubs, not to exceed 600 millimetres. In the centre of that will be a seat that will not penetrate the soil. And the WA Planning Commission have agreed to the professional concept plan that was presented by Ashfield. Now, our problem is, at the last state election, our very own Dave Kelly agreed to provide $30,000 to Ashken to do a lot of this work, including management plans, by the way, if that is needed. For a variety of reasons, it fell through the crack. It wasn't through the cracks. It wasn't a project, although I was the initiator of the project. I didn't take it up. I have now done so, simply because the person was doing it, as I said.
Are you answering Councillor McGee's question?
Would it be okay to just try and get an answer to...
Oh, sorry, I thought I was generally speaking. I have been told, because I was just providing some background, because I have now taken over the project, I'm speaking directly to the government department that is responsible for allocating the funds. If we don't do it in a very short space of time, we are likely to lose those funds.
Oh, so this is about allocating the grant funding?
Allocating the grant funding. What they need is in principle support from you, the council, to say that in principle, non-binding, if this, what will happen is they will provide the $30,000 grant funding, provided down to Bassendean, in principle, say they will provide maintenance, which will be probably a litter collection and providing security services throughout normal ranger services. Very little more. There is no intention to plant grass.
Councillor Hamilton, you had a question?
I do. I have a question of, through the chair of the officers. Sorry, Mr. Councillor Brown. Have you you mentioned something about, you know, leasing. I would have thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, I would have thought that the town would take a management order over that land. So leasing is not the appropriate terminology, is it?
The council resolution says management order or lease agreement. So normally in the past we have taken management orders of large parcels of land. In this particular case, it's just for the council's looking just for the very top section of that Villiers Street outlook, not the embankment, because the embankment has previously councillors been advised of that. But look, just picking up on Councillor Brown's comment, the town has actually written to the Department of Planning, Land and Heritage, and actually articulated the council's direction and interest in advised them, we've endorsed the Ashfield Can concept plan, we've advised them of the requirement for a management plan for the site, and we've followed it up with correspondence to them only last week upon receiving the Councillor Brown's email. So, I think they're quite aware of council's expectations. So I will again follow them up and just say to them, look, we need you to provide us with that management plan so that we can proceed to the direction that's been provided to us.
Can I ask a question of Councillor Brown?
Yes.
Or not? Okay. You have to answer the question though, Councillor Brown.
Okay. Very quick question.
Yep.
Does this grant money have an expiry? Like, do you have to have this information by, say, the 30th of June or something? Is there an expiry date on this or not?
My understanding is the 30th of June will be the cut-off point. There are some administrative things to be achieved before then, and one of those administrative things is to get an agreement in principle, non-binding, from the town that if this project should come to fruition, the town will provide some basic maintenance services. The Ashfield, Cairn, and the community of Ashfield and Bassendean will, and some of our community groups, will provide planting program, will provide plant maintenance, and all those things that go to look after the park. All I'm seeking is an in-principle agreement that this fantastic community project that comes off, we will provide some basic management assisting Ashfield, Cairn and the community of Bassendean.
So Councillor Mikichuk, then Gandjil, then Hamilton.
I seem to recall maybe in a previous resolution we did ask for an estimate of costs.
That's 0.7.
That hasn't been forthcoming.
Sorry, the 0.7 is of the council resolution actually asks for that.
So it's not available currently?
No, we haven't received it.
Just the kind of sequence of kind of decision-making seems a little bit, you know, like it'd be great to have that number in order to feel comfortable with that. Or, you know, to aid in this decision.
Just following on from Councillor Mikichuk's comment, is this something complex that makes it difficult for us to estimate? So why can't we estimate that?
Well, the management plan, the site management plan, needs to look at the health and safety aspects. So that requires, somebody to go out and actually provide that assessment in regards to what the risks would be and how that risk needs to be mitigated. For potential for people, because it is a grass area already, so how it's going to be mitigated in regards to mowing issues, and what the annual maintenance costs are based on the proposal that's been endorsed by council.
Councillor Gandjil, and then Councillor Hamilton, and then yourself, Councillor Brown.
Yes, thank you. Question for Councillor Brown. I was just wondering, this is, under my recollection, a commitment that was provided under what is referred to as local projects, local jobs, that was delivered by the current state government. I'm just wondering, who informed you that there was a timeline in relation to the allocation of the funding no longer being available post June 30 this year?
If I may, I'll take that question as I don't have the name of the person that I'm speaking to in my position as Vice President of Ashfield Cairn. I was given the understanding from the previous person I took this over from that as of June 30th they wanted us to put some firm proposals in place, and one of those in sequence was for the town to provide this in principle low cost in principle event. We're not asking people to pick up a tab for it, because the town of Bassendean through the grant, the Ashfield Cairn through the grant, will provide a lot, and through community volunteerism, will be achieving a lot of what we want to do. Bearing in mind, Ashfield Cairn has a very strong history of park management through the reserve in Ashfield.
Gary Blanch
Reserve. So.
Hamilton,
we do have a history.
You had another question?
Oh, sorry, I thought.
Oh, you've answered. No.
I could make a suggestion here to Councillor Brown that perhaps councillors might be more receptive to this if there was some sort of provision in there that, you know, we give in principle to provide maintenance services on the basis that no works will proceed until all approvals are received, or something along those lines. I'm just curious about whether there is scope to actually word this in a way that's more acceptable. I find it is an unusual situation, and I don't know if potentially this could perhaps come back to council to allow the officers to have another month to seek out more information. That's the other alternative.
I would agree to that amendment.
So can we clarify what the amendment is being proposed?
Okay. Well, first,
I don't understand how the amendment aids anything on I'm still
I'm still questioning.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you have a specific question?
I just am not clear how the amendment adds to any of what we're trying to resolve, and I personally still don't understand why number 7 hasn't been provided, at, which would aid in
so
the whole process.
Councillor Brown, would you be agreeable? We've got another month until the end of the financial year. So this has been raised. If we ask the staff to communicate further with the department and we can get something clarified and then revisit it at our June meeting, would that be acceptable to you?
Yes.
Yes?
It allows me to then correspond with my other hat on to the WA Planning Commission.
Okay, so we're looking at a deferral motion for this item.
Yeah.
So would you like to move...
Yes.
Yep. Seconded. Councillor Hamilton. Anybody against? All those in favour? So deferred until the June meeting with the understanding that staff will follow up on this
second.
In the interim. 11.2 is Councillor Hamilton's notice of motion around differential rating. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you. I have some questions in relation to the terminology used in the Office of Commons. Specifically on page 74, the first dot point there, it says vacant properties. Is what is meant by that houses that don't have people in them or cleared blocks of land?
Through the chair, cleared blocks of land.
And there was some questioning, or a line of questioning that was asked of staff at the briefing session in relation to the level of rates applied to cleared blocks of land, or as they're referred to here, vacant properties. Are all vacant properties or cleared blocks of land on the minimum rate?
Through the Act, there's a combination of some minimums,
mm-hmm.
which the majority are. There's a number that are actually over the minimum. So there's, I suppose, the ones that are higher GRV rated, obviously, are over the minimum.
And houses that have the minimum rate applied to them, are there also houses or properties with houses built on them that people are living in?
Through the chair, yes, there are houses that are rated through the minimum rate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the number, but yes, there are houses with a low GRV that fall into a minimum rate.
Okay, so further to that, if not all vacant properties are on the minimum rate and not all properties with the minimum rate are vacant properties, then how do the following dot points add to the discussion, or what relevance do they have with relation to the need to council to consider the proposed rate in the dollar and the applicable minimum and as such? I don't follow.
I guess the strategy that some other councils follow, that are actually pulling out the vacant properties and identifying them separately and creating a differential rate for those properties, I'm not too sure what their rationale is. I know some of the one or two of the examples that I've looked at, the minimum rate could be $1,000, but the minimum rate for specific vacant properties could be double that. And I guess that's dependent on each council. They've got different rationales to come up with that.
Okay,
rate.
So just a further question, if I may. If we already know that there's approximately 210 vacant properties or cleared properties in the town, is it not possible that we just apply a, say, 1.99 times current rating to those properties for the coming financial year?
We could do that. Through the chair, we could do that, yes.
Okay.
That could be possible, but we would need to go through the process of creating the object and reason and going through that advertising period, which is when we act to actually go through that process.
Apologies, could I just have clarification of what that...
I was just establishing that not all vacant lots are on the minimum rate and not all minimum lot rates are vacant.
Yep.
That we know that there's approximately 210 vacant lots in the town, and is it not possible, therefore, that we could just say for those vacant lots, they are rated at 1.99 times the current rating?
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton.
Question for, through the chair for the officers. On page 73 in the officers' comments, down the bottom, it's got council considered two reports have been prepared in consideration for the implementation of differential rates resolved on the 22nd of May 2018. Provide a report identifying the number of vacant lots, including zonings, and undertake an analysis of differential rating for those properties. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we ever received a report identifying the number of vacant properties back then in 2018, including the zonings, and yes?
Chair, I'd have to check that, but I'm pretty sure as the author of that report that information was provided to the audit committee in my report.
Okay.
But I don't have the report in front of me, so I'd have to...
Okay, so if that report has already been compiled in 2018, then my motion is only asking for information to be brought for consideration by council at the first budget workshop. So if that report's already been created in 2018, it shouldn't be too difficult for the staff to bring that information to our first budget meeting so that councillors can bounce the idea around. And that's all I'm asking for in my motion. Is that correct? That if it's already existing, it can come to that meeting?
That's the report on the That's the report on the number of vacant properties.
Okay, it says provide a report identifying the number of vacant lots, including zonings, and undertake an analysis of differential rating for those properties.
Yes.
Okay, so that would indicate that you already have compiled some information, and as such, it shouldn't be a difficult thing for that information to come to our first budget meeting. Would that be correct?
Sure, that's correct.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
Councillor Wilson?
If alternately, hypothetically, Councillor Hamilton was to accept an amendment to her motion, and Council were to decide tonight that we would apply a differential rating to vacant lots, would that take away some of the time pressures that you've outlined in the rest of the report?
Chair, I guess if the council recommended tonight to go down that path, that could save a little bit of time, but we still need to go through the advertising process and we have to create an objects and reasons to go through that advertising process. So I guess the time frame would be marginally less, but not significantly, I don't think, because the advertising period would actually close before, just before the next council meeting. So for the council to consider the objects and reasons, if there were any, then I guess the agenda had probably closed at the June meeting.
And just one last question. Are you aware that the City of Netherlands, for example, already has a differential rate in place for vacant land, and the objects and reasons that they presented have already been deemed acceptable?
Through the chair, no, I don't have specific knowledge about Netherlands, but I have knowledge of two or three other councils that are going through that process. Netherlands, I wasn't aware of that one, through the chair.
Councillor Hamilton, thank
you. Would officers find it helpful if I sent you the links to the 75% of property of councils in metro area that have differential rating and have listed their objects and reasons, because I have downloaded all of them.
Through the chair, it could be assistance, but I suppose we're specifically looking at vacant property, so not all of those councils may have a differential for vacant property.
And
could be assistance.
Okay, and would officers actually note that in the background information on my motion, I have actually provided the objects and reasons that have been utilised by three different councils, which are, I actually downloaded those because they are applicable to this town specifically, and I added an extra dot point of my own, which makes it four objects and reasons to support this. So if the officers, would the officers like me to give you the links to those specific councils?
Chair, that would be of assistance, but I guess when we go out to advertise, when we create the objects and reasons, I guess I would prepare that in consultation with the CEO, and then we would have to advertise, because I know looking at some of the councils, there are different objects and reasons to vote the property.
Yes.
Some vary from council to council, so I would assume that we would have to work, I'd have to work in consultation with the CA to come up with the best objects and reasons for the town.
Okay.
One last question.
Okay. Can I confirm the questioning that I actually asked the officers at the briefing session last week, where the officers indicated that to shorten the timeline for advertising and what have you, that it was more than it would be easy or available to create a special council meeting just for the approvals, and then that could go straight out to advertising. Is that correct? Because I did ask that last week.
Okay,
so the timeline, because I noticed in the officer's report here that you've indicated that it would delay the budget until the approval of the budget until the end of August, but in fact that could well not happen if we manage things properly. Is that right?
So, Chair, it just depends, Councillor. If we get a significant amount of objections to the advertising or the proposal, then I guess we would have to come back and Council would have to consider those objects, or sorry, those reasons or objections to the differential rate.
Okay.
So,
we've got your motion, Councillor Hamilton. It's just been seconding?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we've got Councillor Hamilton's motion moved, seconded Councillor Wilson. Is there anybody against? All those in favour? You're against.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, yep. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor
yes,
Gandrill?
Thank you.
Yes. I'm going to time you.
Okay. We have discussed quite extensively since I've been on Council, which is 18 months now, that we have significant numbers of vacant land, specifically in our business district here, which have been vacant for some considerable time, and they're underutilised, they attract illegal dumping, the rangers are forever chasing up landowners to clean up their properties, get rid of rubbish, mow the grass that's grown waist high. So we have ongoing problems with vacant land in many, many aspects. In the meantime, ratepayers who pay normal rates are actually subsidising these vacant lots as we pay for new infrastructure. This benefits all ratepayers. However, vacant land, which is paying often a minimum rate or is paying a lower rate than normal residential properties, they are actually receiving the benefit of all the money that council spends year in, year out to upgrade our infrastructure. And as such, I think this needs to be a situation that's addressed, that we need to bring in an equitable process. Now, as I've said through my investigations, over 75% of metropolitan councils actually use a differential rating system. The Local Government Act allows us to do differential rating. One of the categories that they allow us to do a differential rating is vacant land. This is not a complex system that I'm proposing. It is a simple two-tier system where we have vacant land charged at a differential rate from all other improved land. It's a simple system. It's not something that will take up an enormous amount of staff time. It is something that will introduce a mechanism to address some of the expenditure that we have with extra services with our rangers, and it's also a mechanism that will allow rating to be applied more evenly so that ratepayers in improved residential properties are not paying more than they have to. At the moment, they are subsidising other categories of property, and I think we should be looking at that now as councillors.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton. Councillor Wilson, would you like to speak?
Thank you, Your Worship. I will exercise my seconding rights. I wholeheartedly support the purpose and intent of this notice of motion moved by Councillor Hamilton. In fact, I'm happy to go much further, but I appreciate that other councillors might not have thought as in detail on this issue as Councillor Hamilton may have, and would benefit from some more in-depth discussion around the topics. When I was door-knocking throughout the town, when I sought election to council, two common themes came up, concerns that our neighbours had. One of them was land banking and the way that a very small group of people in our community have land banked significant tracts of land, particularly within our town centre, particularly in close proximity to the train station, that has remained vacant, empty and unimproved for a long period of time. There is a great level of concern in our community about that practice, and people want to see some changes to our policy and our rate settings that will encourage some improvement of that land so that we can get better use of the land, particularly close to train stations, and better vibrancy within our town. And I know that a lot of effort is being undertaken recently to increase the vibrancy of Old Perth Road, art projects and such, but the truth is, until the large tracts of vacant land in our town centre that are currently sitting idle are improved, and until that is able to bring in social housing, to bring in more people into our town centre, no amount of whimsical art is going to uplift the vibrancy or the economic viability of the businesses within our town. So, yes, if we can tax land bankers into doing something about the land that they sit idle on at the moment, then I'm all for that. There was one particularly harrowing tale that somebody told me about a house that was next door to where they lived, a lovely young couple who had bought an old weatherboard house in one of the heritage areas of the town, and the neighbours next door, the house fell into a state of disrepair. After some time, it was no longer able to be rented out because it was not fit for human habitation. At that time, homeless people moved in, and the neighbours thought that the first lot of homeless people that moved in were very nice and kind, and they kept to themselves. And
there's not a vacant block.
I'll get to that.
You've got 20 seconds to get to it.
Long story short, after the second lot of homeless people moved in who were running an illegal brothel out of the house, and the police came and there was a gun drawn after an altercation, the owners of that property then decided to level the block, and it has remained vacant ever since. And I think that if we can encourage people who own these vacant blocks to do something useful with them, then we should.
Thank you, Councillor Wilson. Councillor Gangell?
Thank you, Your Worship. Just going on Councillor Wilson's justification, the biggest land bankers in the town centre are, is in fact the council and state government. The biggest proportion of land within the town centre that is undeveloped is in fact the council and the state government. The proportion of land that he's referring to is a very, very small proportion of land. Potentially there may be further reference to areas that people would like to see better developed, that are currently developed, but they are not vacant land in the town centre. So I'll just make that analogy there. But I'm actually, whilst I'm not against looking at the proposal, council did have a workshop, and council, it was explained to council that there is a considerable amount of time constraints within the staff at the moment in trying to prepare the budget under very trying circumstances in the at the present moment in time. So I believe that whilst we can potentially implement something for the following financial year budget, I don't believe with the time frames and time constraints that's currently upon council at the present moment in time that we should be looking to prolong or even put anything in place, additional hurdles in place of our upcoming budget process, which needs to get underway very, very promptly. As I have said, there is considerable constraint. Now, personally, I don't see vacant properties as a huge barrier in the town. Certainly hasn't been issues raised with me, I understand, and they have been raised with me in relation to town centre per se, with what could occur there, but generally throughout the town, hasn't been a broader issue that's been raised with me. I think we need to be careful that we don't go down a means of just demanding that blocks get developed without due design being put on the developments that are put on the blocks, because if you try to put penalised people, then you could get development that that potentially you don't want necessarily occurring in those areas. Whilst they are vacant, they do add to the green space in the town, and certainly don't add to the heat island effect that we have with building going up. But certainly, just due to the timeframes that council has been explained to us, that I don't believe this is an opportune time to implement this.
Thank you, Councillor Gadgil. Is there anybody who'd like to speak for the motion, Councillor Brown?
Thanks, Your Worship. I support the motion. Firstly, because it sends a message that we won't tolerate land banking. It motivates development to do so. It goes towards meeting our density obligations under Perth Penal 3.5. It stimulates local employment and will undoubtedly invigorate the community. Therefore, I support the motion.
Thank you. Is there anyone who'd like to speak against? For? Councillor Hamilton?
Okay. correct a few misconceptions there. Councillor Gangel, it wasn't actually a workshop on differential rating. It was...
No, it was, I said a workshop.
It was brought up at the end of a concept briefing, so it wasn't actually a prepared workshop. I will say that I did request a workshop on this in January, February, March, wherever, and it didn't happen. So I do think that there has been time, more time, to look at this properly, which we now find ourselves in a situation where we're being told time limits, time limits. This is why I have actually put forward a very simple, the most simple proposal for differential rates that you could possibly have, because we have some time issues now. I know that people have spoken about land banking, but I also think there's an extra aspect to this which most people don't consider, and that is the attraction of paying lower rates on vacant land. And that attraction means that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes houses get bowled over simply because that land will attract a lower rate. Now, that is a problem, because not only does that demolish houses that don't need to be demolished, it reduces the number of potential rental properties in the town. It reduces a whole host of facilities. It reduces activation in the town, because people who might live in those houses that are no longer there are no longer in the town spending money. So there's a whole host of reasons why this is an issue. And I think that bringing in differential rates is not a compulsion to actually develop. We are not sitting there with a hammer hitting them over the head saying, you must develop. It is simply recouping money that we are losing in respect to extra expenditure for services that are provided to actually cater to keep those lots in good condition, because quite often they're left to go to rack and ruin. It is a means of actually levelling the playing field a little bit, so that our ordinary ratepayers are not paying... I mean, it won't affect them enormously, but it will just bring their rates down a little bit while someone else pays a little bit more. I don't see this as being an outrageous process. I think that given that 75% of councils in Perth Metro have gone down this road, must surely indicate that it is a lever that has been provided to local government in an effort to actually assist us to manage our town.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton. So all those in favour of the motion? So we've got Councillor Wilson, Mikichuk, Hamilton, Quinton, Brown, McLennan, and against Councillor Gangel, and that is carried. Thank you, everyone. Item 12, announcements of notices of motion for the next meeting. Sit back and get ready for Councillor Wilson's lengthy motion.
Thank you, Your Worship. I would like to announce a notice of motion for the next meeting. And I'm required by the standing orders to read it out, I understand. The Council of the Town of Bassendean has endorsed becoming an early adopter of a third food organics and garden organics, or FOGO bin, because it will reduce landfill, reduce the amount of pollution going into our environment, increase recycling, and convert some of our waste, which would otherwise go into landfill, into useful compost.
Can I just interrupt you for a minute? Is this your motion or the background?
The motion in its entirety, yes.
Let's start with that.
That's the motion.
May I continue?
you only are required to read out the actual motion, not all of the...
Yes. I've framed the motion in its entirety. Is it okay? Council notes that the Southern Metropolitan Regional Council, or the SMRC, undertook a trial of the FOGO waste system, which was evaluated by Catalyse, and notes the Catalyse report published by the SMRC in May 2018, which analysed survey responses from 1,952 residents in selected areas of the city of Melville. Council notes that the FOGO trial conducted by the SMRC consisted of weekly collection of food organics and garden organics bin and alternating fortnightly collection of the general waste bin and recycling bin, which resulted in a reduction in general waste collection from each household. Council notes that the evaluation report into the FOGO trial conducted by the SMRC found that fortnightly collection of the general waste bin were, and I quote, most positive amongst seniors, empty nesters, those in a duplex villa or unit or retirement home, and with fewer people living in the household, end quote, but were, quote, more problematic for younger adults, families with children living at home, and in larger households of four or more people. Council also notes the recommendations of the SMRC following the trial of the Walga Forum, following the trial to the Walga Forum on FOGO, with factors it recommends critical to success for the implementation of a FOGO waste system being: one, to understand your community, property types and demographics; two, ensure all staff, elected members and stakeholders are engaged throughout the process; three, aim to get it right on day one of the rollout; four, try to be flexible for residents' needs where possible; and five, feedback, progress and updates to the community. Then, taking into account the findings of the SMRC FOGO trial and research conducted by Catalyse into that trial, Council resolves that should the town adopt a FOGO system with fortnightly general waste bin collection, to one, provide residents of the town with the option to opt in to having a second general waste bin prior to the rollout of the third FOGO bin in order to ensure that families with children living at home and larger households have adequate general waste capacity to meet their needs; two, to include this option, opt-in option, in a mail-out to all households prior to the rollout of the third FOGO bin, along with other printed materials which provide general information about the new three-bin FOGO system to enable this opt-in capacity to be available prior to day one of the new scheme; and three, to charge those households who do opt in to having an additional general waste bin to meet their needs, brackets as is currently the case for households who have an additional bin, close brackets, an amount, an additional amount in their annual waste levy fee no greater than cost recovery, which could be removed in following years should the household subsequently inform the town that they no longer need the additional capacity.
Thank you. Okay, you've got a copy of that, Amy, I believe. Excellent. Because we're not going to make him read it out again for you.
It's just for next month.
I didn't even attend.
Okay. So item 13 now is confidential business. So thank you to all the members of public who have joined us this evening. To have a move